Ahoy, authors! You're listening to the Writership Podcast, a show focused on helping indie authors master self-editing skills. So come aboard and get ready to find the treasure in your manuscript with hosts Leslie Watts and Clark Chamberlain.
Welcome to episode 82 of the Writership Podcast. I'm Leslie Watts, here with Clark Chamberlain from the Book Editor Show. Every week, we show you editing in action with tips that you can use to improve your own stories. If you want to learn more about the Writership Podcast, you can visit the website at writership.org/podcast.
As you know, the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at Author Marketing Club, home of the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber tool. You know you need high-quality reviews for your books, so you should use the AMC Reviewer Grabber tool to quickly and easily locate reviewers that are ready, willing, and able to review your books for you. Become a premium member of AMC now by visiting www.authormarketingclub.com and get instant access to this tool and more.
Hey, Clark.
Hey, how's it going, Leslie?
It's going all right. It's going all right. We're still in world building. Our focus for October, which has been really fun.
It's been so much fun on both this and the Book Editor Show. I've been just really enjoying like tackling world building and coming at it and like learning stuff on new things that I didn't know before. Plus just really, I don't know. It's just been really fantastic. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it too, because it's fun to visit places that are not the real world.
Indeed it is.
This week I was thinking about the many layers and levels of editing. What I mean is, you know, when we're doing editing, whatever kind of editing we're doing, if we're doing developmental or copy editing or even proofreading, you know, we're making several different passes through the manuscript to look for particular things like for instance, dialogue. And when I'm proofreading, I'm looking, like I do a pass for just there, there, and there, all spelled differently to make sure that each use is proper and all of that. So in the world building phase, when you're looking at what you have in your story, I think it's just as important to be looking at the different levels and knowing that this is, it takes a lot of work and making the words do as much work as possible, meaning, you know, every sentence isn't just conveying some information, it's pulling the weight. It's, you know, it's building the story, it's conveying the mood, it's revealing character and all of that. It's a lot of work. So I suggest when people are going through the process and looking at their world building and just revision and editing in general, that you be really kind to yourself and get yourself an ice cream periodically and, you know, have chocolate nearby if that's your thing. And, you know, because we get up here and we talk about it and we, you know, there are things that we can see clearly, and it's not always easy to spot in your own work or to fix. So hats off to you for doing the work, and be kind to yourself. That's my PSA for the week.
That's fantastic. Because just finishing that novel took a lot of work, you know, so you've done a lot more than just anyone else has done. So it's pretty awesome. So that's good stuff. I've got a quote. Yeah? I don't know if you want it. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's who are we hearing from this week?
Robert Mackey. Says your cast has the knowledge of the past, present, themselves, and each other that your readers and audience members will need to know in order to follow events. Therefore, at pivotal moments, let your characters use what they know as ammunition in their struggles to get what they want. These revelations will deliver the pleasure of discovery to the emotionally invested reader audience as the fact quickly vanishes into the storygoer's background awareness.
Yes. You know, this came to my awareness because I've been listening to the Story Grid podcast, where Sean Coyne and Tim Grawl lately they've mentioned a few times using exposition as ammunition. And this is a concept that I believe comes originally from Robert McKee. And I just love that, you know, that we're not just passing along information, but we're saving it for a moment when it will have a greater impact, mm-hmm. which will, you know, then the reader will absorb it as part of the narrative, and it doesn't have to be this, it's not teaching, like I think you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's not teaching, it's just, it's part of the world, part of the story. So they take it all in a much more complete and experiential way.
Mm-hmm. And it's these points, you know, that just like you were saying before, multiple layers going through your work again and again, mm-hmm. that this is the actual art of writing is in the editing, and you're putting this stuff together. And
hear,
really,
hear.
Like, yes, really, really shining as your art, becomes more and more, interconnected throughout the words on the page. So,
I get all emotional about this.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Like, I'm really passionate about this stuff when I'm teaching, you know, like I'm just like, you got to get in it. You got to understand that you're the professional here, and you got to know this stuff, and you got to take it seriously and get in there and go back again and again until you get it right. And I love it. I love it. I love story. I love how powerful it is.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Speaking of story, I guess we better get to it.
Oh, yeah.
So today's submission is Sentinels Sworn, Book 1, Archmage's Rage, by Andrew J. Carden. It's a fantasy. It's the word count at submission was about 52,000 words. And this is the first chapter after the prologue.
Davin awoke to a pounding on the wooden door to his chambers. His scarred hand flopped out onto the night table and felt around for his eye patch, and he slipped it on before answering the summons. He had been up late last night, the High Sentinel jumping down his throat over the recent disasters that the hunt for the Greer turned out to be. Needless to say, an early rude awakening was the last thing he needed right now. "What is it?" he asked. The new partner. He's ready for you," a gruff voice responded from the other side of the door. He rolled out of his straw bed and snapped his scabbard onto his belt, then threw on a thick brown cloak to keep out the draft of the stone stronghold. Davin gave himself one quick look in the shard of a thing that served as a mirror before going to meet his new partner. It was important to look properly intimidating when meeting a new partner, he supposed. His brown hair was cropped closely to the sides of his head and a few inches long along the top, down to the base of his neck. Flecks of gray were sprinkled throughout the chestnut brown and streaked their way through his short beard. One dark gray eye stared back at him. The black leather patch only partially covered an elongated scar that worked its way through his left eye. He was much larger these days. Of course, he was always big, but the ruby red shard mounted into the pommel of his sword lended him even more thick muscle to his tall frame. The door was shoved open slightly by another muscled bald man with scars decorating his pale head. "Hey, I heard you the first time, Donner," Davin grumbled. "Was just making sure that you were on your way, Dav. Alnum is getting impatient. I think he's still mad at you for young Tontic," he said apologetically. He reached back deep in his throat and spit into his chamber pot that sat at the base of his bed. "Tontic's an idiot, and my fault he's an idiot, right?" Donner splayed a stupid grin across his face through the crack in the door. "High Sentinel seems to think so." Davin yanked the door open all the way and shoved the grinning warrior out of the way. He continued down the dimly lit hallway towards the foyer of the cavernous stronghold. The sworn sentinels had called home for nearly 1,000 summers, with Donner right on his heels. The masonry of the fort was cracked with old age, and the only decorations were an assortment of weaponry littered throughout its halls and rooms. The stronghold housed just under 100 warriors when they were billeted. However, normally most were away on bounties throughout Alaria, Bounties would come through the captain of requisitions, who would pass him off to whichever man he thought capable of slaying the creature responsible for plaguing that specific piece of countryside. The Order of the Sentinels then took half of the bounty, and the Sentinel team took the other half. Together, they had to keep the realm safe from terrors for over a millennia. "So what's he like?" Davin mumbled over his shoulder. "Who?" Donner asked. He threw a look at Donner, lifting one of his eyebrows. "The new kid, Donner. Who do you think I'm talking about, shit for brains?" "Oh, name's Raedlim. Apparently he's from Lindhoven." Donner spit the name of the capital out as if it pained him to form the word. That brought Davin's march to a halt. "A city kid, that's unusual." "Not unheard of," Donner said, eyeing the stairs that would lead them down to the foyer. Davin touched a thick finger to his bearded chin and met Donner's eyes. "Was Tontic a city kid?" Donner rolled his eyes and continued towards the narrow stairway that shot down into a well-lit area of the castle. In the middle of the large foyer was a crystalline spire that stretched from the floor to the ceiling, all 10 spans. The entire pillar was about 2 spans around and had jagged growths covering its entire surface. To the sentinels, it was known as the Prism of the Pact, and it was illuminated with multi-hued lights that danced off the constraining dark walls around it. 4 sentinels were constantly in position in the room guarding the prism from any being that would intend it harm. The prism was the source of the power of the shards for nearly 100 sentinels that roamed Delaria, putting waste to its terrors. The shards that were housed in each of the sentinels' weapons were plucked from this very structure and were that gave them their superior strength, speed, and constitution to make it possible to fight some of the more terrible creatures, Delaria. The sentinel wielding a shard healed at 3 times the rate of a normal man, could lift nearly 3 times as much, and was twice as fast. It had taken dozens of geomancers, pyromancers, aeromancers, and hydromancers almost a decade of straight work to create the prism, and these days there were almost no mages left to the world, many of them having been hunted down by the very sentinels that helped to create. Davin sighed at seeing the assembled sentinels within the foyer. Tonic was one of the ones assigned to guard the prism this month, and he leaned heavily on his good leg while staring up at Davin with a look like he had just ingested some rotten fruit. 3 others stood guard. One of their number was Vara, one of the few female sentinels. She sat with her leg straddled the back of a chair and whittled a piece of pine gripped in the other hand. Short blonde hair graced her head that she had obviously cut herself without the aid of a mirror. A curved saber with a glimmering yellow shard in its pommel was strapped tightly to her hip, and she smiled at both of them as they made their descent. The High Sentinel stood with his arms crossed over his large chest, his eyes following Davin as his way down to the foyer. He had black hair that was rapidly turning white and had been receding up his scalp for years now. A long, narrow nose graced his face above a thin, firm mouth that was nearly covered with what some would call a beard, even though it was split by a large scar that whiskers could not longer sprout out of. 2 slightly curved blades graced his hips, topped with pale green shards. Only the High Sentinel was allowed 2 shards, and was a force to be reckoned with because of them. "Sorry, of course, to bother you from your beauty sleep, Davin," the High Sentinel uttered, although the lowering of his bushy gray eyebrows defied the sincerity of his apology. "Sorry for the wait," Davin said, then turned his head to examine the newest partner the High Sentinel was going to saddle him with as punishment. It seemed to be Alnum's newest hobby to give Davin the green-ass boys who all had visions of heroism and adventure in their eyes until they did their first bounty and mysteriously ended up guarding the stronghold for decades on end, passing off their offered job to sentinels like Davin or Donner. At least Tontic was enough of an idiot to overcome his sense of self-preservation. And that's the end of that.
All right. I'm really wanting to... I feel a little sad that the submission ended there, because I want to get a look at who the new partner is. I'm curious about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was my personal opinion there. But So I think this is, we have a great character and there's a really interesting world coming together here. I'm really curious about a lot of things. And I think the spire and the shards are really interesting. I'm curious about the bounties. I love the interplay between the battle-worn veterans and the newbies. And I like the way that the terrors are hinted at, but they aren't. But the author does not explain them. It's not, we don't have an info dump about all the terrors that they are guarding the realm from. So those are some of my favorite details in here. But I feel like there is some world building that I would delay so that they can be used strategically. Because, you know, if you can wait, you know, like the quote that you read at the beginning, if you can wait and deliver them when they're needed and when they can deliver some, you know, impact, because it gives the, you know, it helps the revelation helps the character get what they want, then I think then it becomes really powerful, and you're not slipping into world building. World building is good. Let me separate that. But what we have when we have, it's called info dumping in a lot of ways, in a lot of places. And I don't like the term necessarily, but what it is a concentration of information about the world. And I think you only earn the right to do that after you have really brought the reader in with, you know, and they connect with the character and they have a sense, you know, a sense of the immediate environment. Because even if we've never been here to Illyria, we've been in places like that, or we've seen stories like that. So it's not like you have to tell all of it all at once. So when we get to when he talks about the masonry of the fort and the weaponry and you know, like, I really think the detail that's needed out of this is that we're in a barracks and that's the main thing. And I think it's a good idea definitely for Davin to see the spire and for us to get his take on that or his feelings about it. But I don't think we need all of the history. And in fact, I didn't write this down when I was going through the critique, but I feel in the beginning when we see his weapon, his sword, I think, or it doesn't say exactly. Yes, we do have, it's a sword, that it has the red shard, that we don't need to be told right at that moment in exactly that way, that is what lends more thick muscle to his tall frame, that he could notice, yep, it's there, or yeah, I remember when I wasn't so big and brawny or whatever, you know, but just not even make the direct comparison right then, or the explanation.
Yeah, because I was kind of thinking in a way that it's the difference between experiencing and being instructed. Because I had this great history teacher in college that would bring in artifacts, you know, and, from the time period. We were doing American history up till the Civil War. Uh-huh. And, you know, he'd bring in stuff from these time periods, and he would sing songs from the time period, you know, of the era, and share the stories that weren't just the facts of a battle, but, you know, like sharing individual stories from soldiers' journals and things like this, that really you came to experience the world instead of just being instructed in it by someone coming up and saying, hey, this is where the spire is at, and this is how it gives people the power. And, you know, like, it's just a very different experience when you can come at it versus being the instructor or being the one who's sharing the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, absolutely. And all of these details are really interesting. And if we think about how it would be, you know, like, it's so much more interesting to go to, say, Colonial Williamsburg than it is to read a dry history book. And mm-hmm. so I think, yeah, that's just, I'm just making your point again, repeating your point. But yeah, absolutely. And I think, because these are great details, and to reveal them when they can be strategic, when we can, you know, then.
Right.
So you might have a pyromancer who thinks, aha, I can undermine the spire because I was involved in its crafting or whatever, you know, that you can reveal those details that way.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked in some of the past episodes about this point of view issue, about what the point of view character is actually seeing, mm-hmm. right? And this is something to think about, is, you know, if he's walking through these halls, and is he really thinking about the history of how the place was constructed so many years ago, and you know, and what that means? And it's the idea of, you know, if you've passed the same thing month after month, like for me, you know, when I joined the army, you know, it's really fun to go shoot cannons for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. But once you've done it for a month, like, it's a job.
Then you're right? done.
And right. you're done. And you just go and you're like, I don't care. Like, it doesn't even, you know, yeah, we got to go to work. And right. so, I mean, he's getting up, putting on the stuff, he's going to work. So what's he really thinking about as he's going down there? And I think a lot of it is right, you know, that he's thinking about, oh, I got to get saddled with another one of these green sidekicks again.
Right.
and what kind of pain is that going to cause?
A city kid.
But at least it's a city kid this time.
this
That'll be
time.
Different.
right? A little variety.
Yeah. And I really like that idea, though, of the strategic, and where you're going to place this, and when is it going to work? So when I was going through this piece and thinking about it, I was like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. This is why the hero's journey is used so often in science fiction and fantasy, because you take a novice who learns from a mentor about the world, which means the reader is learning about that world at the same pace as mm-hmm. the novice. But where you have this guy, Davin, he's a veteran, which means he's probably not going to be thinking about these things. He's going to have this green sidekick that's going to come along and probably ask a lot of questions and stuff, which will be fine. But it is a different way to build a world when you're coming at it from a point of view character who probably is not noticing as much as he used to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and you had a comment in line that I thought was funny, because it, you know, there's one female character, right? There's only one woman in the keep, and he's looking at her sword. What does he really notice?
Yeah. You
know? And so I think that, you know, that's really valid, that we see it through his eyes, because it not only helps us get to know the world better, but it helps us get to know him and have more sympathy, you know, connect with him as a character, whether we sympathize with him or not. I think we probably could sympathize with him if you've ever been a manager, or, you know, had someone you were trying to train up who's brand new and, you know, and doesn't know anything. And
the boss is out to get you.
And yeah. Yeah. And oh, those darn, you know, whatever's out there that you have to protect the realm from, and oh, this pesky eye that is just, you know, not working for me because I got, anyway, I'll stop there, but you get the picture, that we can relate even if we haven't had the precise experience or been in this world. And mm-hmm. and I want to say again that this is not, it's not easy stuff to reveal these things necessarily, that we have to, that it's done in layers and, mm-hmm. and continuing to work through the story and the backstory of the character and the history of the world, and find those details and wait for the optimal time to reveal them. But this will make your story so much better and really build your storytelling chops. So I recommend spending time here. Honestly, spend more time here than fixing your commas. I know it's blasphemous, but no, I mean, it is much more important to get this part right.
Right.
People will forgive you a couple of typos.
Yeah. And it's starting here from the beginning, you know, it's building a base of familiarity that the reader is going to be able to connect with this character. So like that's the normalcy. And because then we're pulling them into this other world. Mm-hmm. And and that's something I really try to emphasize, just like you mentioned with the commas, like that should be the last thing on your mind until you've got the story in place. Mm-hmm. Because why spend your time on a chapter going through and getting it all grammatically correct and then cut the chapter because it doesn't work in the story you're trying to tell?
Right.
Like, yeah, no, spend the time on the story and mm-hmm. get it to work.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we do include inline comments for things like commas and that sort of thing. And I have a copy editing sort of suggestion for the author, but that's all by way of example. But you definitely want to work in the story first, because some stuff you might cut, some stuff you might rework substantially. The point is that you want to get you don't start painting the house until you have the foundation and the frame.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't go, I love this, analogy. Like if you go and look exactly what you're saying, you don't paint it until it's done. Like you don't build a house one room at a time, like everything comes together, mm-hmm. In its proper order. Mm-hmm. Coming back to point of view just for a second while I was thinking about this, sure. Just want to point this out again, be careful on getting into these cliches of the point of view character looking in a mirror mm. to examine themselves mm-hmm. so that the reader gets an idea of what they look like. As we're going through this, there was a couple other spots where, scratching his beard and doing some different movements where we get some character description anyway. Look for those places to put that type of stuff in so you don't get caught doing these, what do you call it? The police description? Like
there's a police description. Yeah. Where we get the hair color, eye color, height.
And everything like that. Because this is just as bad as when you're overburdening with world building information that you think people ought to know. The same thing can happen with character description. Like you have to have a real good balance to all of this so that we get a sense of the world, but not to the point where we've been overloaded and we just are getting a little distracted.
Yeah. Well, and it's common. It's common, I think, to start with how the person looks mm-hmm. because we live in a very visual world and we think about that kind of thing and it's surface, right? So it probably is what we often notice first. But in this world where Davin is seeing basically the same people except for the newbies and the same surroundings all the time, what does he notice? He's not going to notice probably what's the guy's name? The High Sentinel. That's his title. The High Sentinel is not going to be thinking about his beard or his, the right. fact that he's, or he might. I mean, he might. but the point is to be intentional about that and to find those details, just like you're finding the details in the world, finding the mm-hmm. details in the people that are important, that reveal something, that do more than just give us a picture, and revealing those in the same way at important mm-hmm. moments when it helps the character get what they want.
Right. Because if Davin's walking down the steps and he doesn't notice the only woman that lives there in the keep, and then he really notices his boss,
right.
there might be something else.
That'd be a big else.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Right. That he might the attraction levels are different, and then we get a look into who he is. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what all this is about, is that we're building the character. I do like the idea of him, like, I want to look in the mirror to make sure that my eye patch is right so I'm intimidating.
Yeah.
Like I did like that.
Yeah.
That's a real show of who this guy is. He's going to go down there to the new greenie and wants to make sure that he looks badass.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
but yeah, like what are the other details that he's going to actually care about?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Absolutely. I love it. I wanted to mention, so I have a lot of line editing suggestions in here. And what I wanted to say about that, and please go check those out in the show notes for episode 82 at writership.org/episodes, because there are a lot of suggestions. And I didn't want to overwhelm the author, but I wanted to give some examples about, you know, of ways you can tighten the narrative. And so these are suggestions. You can take them or leave them. But I wanted to, you know, show you like how does your prose look when it's fighting lean, if you'll forgive the the reference there. And cutting expositions is a big thing. And I found a lot of those extra prepositions, that is, in here that, and those come in through our speech because we use a lot of them as we're talking. We're not planning necessarily what we're going to say, so we sometimes load up the prepositions and that kind of thing, so that it's natural in our speech and it comes out in the writing. And once you learn to spot them, then they're pretty easy to pull out. And so I just wanted to include that by way of example. I didn't mean to make the submission look like a crime scene. So so it's, yeah, suggestions and ways to tighten up. So and I wanted to mention, I know we talked about it last week, but the phonetic spelling of of the dialogue within the dialogue. It does, you know, you just want to make sure that you're not distracting the reader from what the characters are saying and doing, because that's the most important thing. So make sure it's function over form when you're doing that kind of thing.
Yep. You don't want to make it more difficult for the reader to get through.
Yeah. And your ideal reader might love that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's always that's always the consideration or the filter through which you want to make these decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Because I'm not that ideal reader.
Right. No, yeah. Clark does not want that stuff. Okay.
Exactly.
If Clark is your ideal reader avatar, then.
Then you spell things correctly. So that's how it is.
He's picky about that.
Uh-huh. Yep, I am. So,
are we at risk of getting into a rant? I kind of feel it out. What was the rant about before? I'm not remembering.
The last rant?
Yeah, what was the last rant?
that's the thing about rants,
the
right?
The only real rant. I think I don't think you've had that many of them, so.
No, I don't. You know, I am an old man, but I don't have as many rants as I probably could have. So,
hey, easy there. I think I'm older than you.
No way. That's not even the
way.
Case. So,
okay, we better get to the editorial mission before this devolves into something a rant about goodness knows what from me. I'm excited about this one. I'm just going to tell you. This is strategic exposition. I sat down and I was like, I was thinking, how can I help people to find the ideal place to reveal the details, the exposition that they need to get in the story? And this is what I've come up with. So this week, schedule 10 minutes each day to write about your world, whether it's fantastical or commonplace, because let's face it, even if you have a contemporary fiction happening in the real world, you are still building your world. You're still choosing the details that you are showing and the places where your characters inhabit. So I recommend free writing. So you're writing with no editing, no crossing out. You keep writing through misspellings and grammatical misadventures. And I want you to write by hand if you normally type, and try different locations throughout the week if you can. The object is to get as many details about your world as possible over the course of the week and shake things up so you're accessing deeper levels of your mind and the story. So on the last day, I want you to look over what you've written and pull out the top five details that you discovered each day that you feel communicate something really important about your world that the reader needs to have. And then, so how do you know which ones will do that? My best guess is that you know the world better than anybody, but try to see it with fresh eyes, which is why I suggested writing by hand and changing location and doing it on multiple days. So you come at it from a different angle, and then you'll kind of get an idea what details do you need to reveal. And especially now, in the alternative, you can take a scene from your manuscript each day and cull the details about your world for your list that way. So when you're done with this, you will have 25 to 35 details. And what I want you to do for each one is to record why the reader needs to know it, when they need to know it, and who can deliver it, and how, to greatest effect. So you're really trying to find how somebody could use a particular detail to get what they want. So if you know that, say, a character is sensitive about her appearance, then you don't want to, when you're introducing the character, say, oh, she's sensitive about her appearance. You want another character to come in and to get what they want, to like to undermine her, to say something like, oh, you're looking a little tired these days, or something like that, something that will, you know, undermine her or show that she is sensitive about her appearance. So that just as an example. And then once you have those details and why and the reader needs to know them and when they need to know them and all of that, then you simply apply them as appropriate.
That is an excellent one. So, sorry.
You're all the club.
Don't forget to sign up and to be able to get those right to your mailbox, your email box. So, yes. And the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at the Author Marketing Club, which you can find at www.authormarketingclub.com. Don't forget, when you become a premium member today, you'll gain access to the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber tool.
Okay. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. If you want to have your five pages of fiction reviewed, please visit writership.org/submissions for our new automated submission process. Finally, be sure to check out the Book Editor Show, which Clark hosts with Peter Turley, and you can find that at thebookeditorshow.com. So that is it for episode 82. We will see you next time on the Writership Podcast.
Ready for Leslie and Clark to help you find the treasure in your manuscript? Submit your pages to writership.org/podcast.